Well, good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to introduce the 30th Chief of Naval Operations back to Yokosuka, second visit as CNO. A little bit of background on who he is and what he's done. He leads a force of 430,000 sailors, 280 ships, and 33,700 aircraft. He's running today's Navy and building tomorrow's Navy at the same time, managing a budget of $143 billion. Big job. More than that, he's a warfighter. He's been the commander of Naval Forces Marianas. He's been the Chief of Staff of 7th Fleet. He's been the commander of Submarine Force Pacific. He's been the commander of 7th Fleet. He is a forward deployed naval sailor. He knows how difficult it is to serve forward as an FDNF sailor, as well as how rewarding it is. So, CNO, welcome back to Yokosuka.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Scott. Appreciate it. And he likes the ramen right outside this gate. Y'all like that place? It's still out there? That's still the best in the world. So before we, I'll give you a few things to talk about, then I want to hear from you, because I'm out here to kind of listen and learn so I can go back and lead. You don't need me out here. What you need are stuff. You need to be organized, trained, and equipped and provided, and I get that, because you're doing a terrific job. But I'm here today, I'll be here tomorrow down in Tokyo, and then leave Sunday, and we're going down to Singapore, where I'm gonna go look at Freedom, our ship, who is down there. They're very excited about having the Freedom down there, and a lot of heads of Navy are gonna be there. There's an international maritime exposition, but the idea is it's sort of her debutante, if you will, coming out. Look at the Littoral Combat Ship, and if you haven't seen her, a picture of her in the paper, it looks pretty good, actually. She's doing quite well. Then I'll stop by in Korea on the way home, and then back to the grind. It's great to be here. And I thought, well, I guess you all want to re-enlist, right? Say, we quit talking, I want to re-enlist. Say, fair enough. So I need you to please stand. You guys ready to go? Y'all ready to go? All right, photographer, I stand here, that's good. I don't want to put my back to people, so I'll kind of go over here. How's that? That work for you? All right. Okay, raise your right hand and repeat after me. Attention oath. I, state your name.
Do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. And I obey the orders of the President of the United States. And the officers appointed over me. In accordance with regulations. And the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So help me God. All right, you're in. Congratulations. Where'd you go? We grew up in Maryland. We're in Maryland. Waldorf, Maryland. Do you like the Redskins? You hate the Redskins. Do you like the Ravens? You like the Ravens and you hate the Redskins and you grew up in Waldorf, Maryland. All right. You're in the devil's lair there, you know. All right. Where'd you grow up? Riverside, California. That's a nice place, isn't it? Yeah, very nice. Congratulations. Where'd you grow up, buddy?
Pittsburgh.
Give me a high five. What high school do you go to? Hempfield? Sorry, I already got a coin. That's where all the rich kids go. Congratulations. Where'd you grow up, buddy?
Maui, Hawaii.
Maui? That's not fair. Where, Lanai? Not Lanai, I'm sorry. What's the name of Lahaina?
Carlos.
Nice golf course there, too. Where'd you grow up, buddy?
Nashua, New Hampshire, sir.
Nashua, New Hampshire, huh? Yes, that's where the University of Hampshire is, isn't it?
Yes, it is, sir.
Yeah, good hockey team, right?
Oh, it's okay.
Okay, all right. Congratulations. How about you, buddy? Where'd you grow up? Medina, Ohio. So a lot of people want to say Medina, but that's not right. It's Medina, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What's that near, anyway? Is that near Cincinnati? Or?
About Akron.
You a Buckeye fan?
Yes, sir.
Right. You got a lot of black and gray, red and gray in your house?
Yes, sir.
All right. Very good. Miss, where'd you grow up?
Brooklyn, New York, sir.
Brooklyn, New York, huh? You like the Nets? Now they've got a basketball team, or you don't care? You don't care? All right. Where'd you go, buddy?
San Diego.
You a Navy brat? What'd your mom or dad do, Wendy?
My dad was MM.
He was MM? What are you? ET? So you got pipes, you got wires, you got it all made, right? Build a house. Nice job. Where'd you grow up, buddy? I'm sorry?
Riverside.
Holy cow. Miss, do you know he's from Riverside? You didn't know. There you go. Huh? You got a friend indeed. Where'd you grow up, buddy? Los Angeles? What? Where's this big city? Where's that? What year? Give me a. Just downtown, right? Right in the middle, huh? Anywhere near the Forum? Former. Okay. Nice to see you. Where'd you grow up, buddy? What are you guys kidding me? Like your neighbors, seriously? Yeah, get out of here. You are? All right.
I can be pointed.
All right. Where'd you grow up, buddy? Crystal Lake, Illinois. What's that near? Is that not far from the Great Lakes? You're not a Navy brat or anything, right? You are. What'd your dad or mom do? A captain? That must have been a little odd. How do you say, son, what are you going to do? And you said, well, dad, nothing like that, right? So what do you do?
IT.
IT? Where are you stationed? Congratulations. Hi, miss, where'd you grow up? Manila, Philippines? Very good. Family back there, or are they elsewhere? Tennessee? That's kind of different, huh? Dolly Partonville, or Nashville, or come again? Cordova, what's that? Memphis? Do you like barbecue? You do? Go to the barbecue shops, the best barbecue ever. Where'd you grow up, buddy? Los Angeles. What the heck? Yeah, you don't understand with those two guys. Congratulations. Where'd you grow up, buddy? Where?
Taizong.
What's that?
By Hong Kong.
All right. How would I know, right? Congratulations. Where'd you grow up, buddy?
Durham?
That make you act dookie, huh? All right, well done. Where'd you grow up, buddy? Killeen? Killeen? Is there a university in Killeen? Baylor? All right, that's pretty good. They got RG3 where we grew up. Hey, buddy, where'd you grow up?
Liberty, Texas, sir.
Liberty? What's that?
It's close to Houston. It's in Corpus Christi.
Okay. You like him, Texas? Yeah. Hey, Dallas Cowboy, you don't care.
Dallas Cowboy, sir.
Cowboy? All right. Congratulations, Augie. Well done. Okay, just a few words and then I'm happy to take questions and answers. So where do we stand today? I think we just kind of secured from reduced visibility back there in the building. And what I mean by that is, usually you guys get underway, you go out on the ship, you got somebody on the bridge driving, you got somebody out there, lookouts, that's where you are right now. Somebody's thinking about the next track, somebody's thinking about what you're doing tomorrow when you go out for operations. Somebody's thinking about maybe next week. Well, that's what usually we're doing this time of year. We're thinking about the current budget, executing it. We're thinking about, we're up on the hill testifying, saying, here's next year's, and somebody's putting together the next 4 years. But with a continuing resolution and sequestration, we were thinking about next week. That's as far as we were doing. That was what February, January, and February were like. And then in March, we finally got a budget for 2013. And the problems that we had in the Navy to get operations going were kind of cut in half. We have of about a $40 billion budget, we were short about $8 billion, 20%. And that got cut in half. So now we're down maybe $4 billion. We've reduced a lot of overhead, travel removed, stuff that maybe didn't need to happen, a lot of headquarters. So the whole $4 billion isn't absolutely needed, but we're working to get through the year. There's another reprogramming, which means we go up to the Congress and we say, hey, the stuff that is in this budget account needs to get over to this budget account, and we would like to reprogram that money. So you may read about that or hear about it, and that kind of finishes up the things that we need to get done here in 2013. So we're distributing the money now. If you're out here, your operating money has been restored. Any maintenance that needed to go in the accounts out here in the FDNF is restored. This is, to me, really the number one area of our Navy that needs to get operated right, needs to be organized, trained, and equipped right. And I'd be happy to hear how you feel about that, but I'm telling you, that's where I'll be here in the near future and as we go on from here. We get more out of you per person, per ship, than we do anywhere else in the Navy. What you do out here is phenomenal. You are the key that keeps this Northeast Asia together, and it's the Northeast Asia that really keeps Asia together. And the Asia Pacific remains our number one priority in the future. Even with sequestration, we still have a long way to go to sort through all that budget stuff. But even with it, we are going to rebalance, and we are going to slowly grow out here. It won't be overnight, but we will continue to grow in the Asia Pacific region. And overall, your Navy is growing. In 2013, we're grown by 2,000 people, and I know some of you are saying, well, they ain't coming on my ship, and I got that. We still got gaps at sea, and we're working on it. We are making progress, and we'll continue to push that. Your fleet commander tells me you're actually manned reasonably well out here, but I'll listen to that as the case may be. So we will continue to grow. In 2014, our budget asked for 4,500 more people. That's net. That's not 45 up and some number down. It's actually about 6,000 increase. And we've got the valve full open at Great Lakes. We are putting people into and through Great Lakes at the highest capacity we can, and includes A School. We have 47 ships under contract right now, or authorized. And so in 2020, if you say, how many ships are you gonna have in 2020? So everybody likes to look at the end of the decade. We'll have 295 ships. Every one of those ships is already under contract except for 8, and 6 of those 8 will go under contract this coming year. And so what I'm telling you is there's a momentum in place right now today, a shipbuilding momentum, and it kind of feeds the same into aircraft building. And I'll tell you that your Navy is growing, and that's in spite of sequestration. You can slow it down, but once ships are under contract and aircraft, we're not going to cancel contracts. That's very expensive. It's a losing proposition. You don't save any money when you do that. So there'll be growth in the Navy as we look out through the next 2 years. So my thing is, we need to be, as I look around the world, we need to be present where it matters, and we need to be ready when it matters. Right now, today, we have one carrier strike group in the Arabian Gulf, and there currently is not a demand signal to put a second in there. You're probably aware we had two out there for a long time. When the budget kind of, when a continuing resolution and we had the sequestration, we went down to one carrier in the Arabian Gulf, and we have another one standing by if needed, but we're just not there right now. So as you look between this year and next year, what are the deployment lengths? Some of you are interested in that because you may transfer. The rest of this year, carrier deployments are going to average about six and a half months, and it's just the way the Eisenhower and the Nimitz, who are going to the Arabian Gulf, the way those are going to come out. But in the 14 area, those carrier deployments are going to be somewhere around eight months plus. A lot of that has to do with the hesitation we had because of the money that was put into the maintenance. We had to slow down the maintenance because we were getting low on money, and we're now trying to catch that up, and those that are already deployed or ready to deploy are going to pick up that slack. But then once we get the ships that are going into maintenance out, we'll be able to move ahead with that as we go on. In November, I did, and we do this once a year, we took what we call take a fix. How are we doing? What do things look like on the track that we want to go on? And when we were finished with that, there are four areas that I would tell you are high priority and on my mind. Four areas we're working on. Number one, and the top one, is sexual assault. And we've been after this for a while. It's in the news big time recently because of some events. A survey that came out, DoD survey that comes out every four years, in this case, last one was in 2010, 3 years, excuse me. But this one showed that sexual assaults are rising. You and I knew that, but it's right there in black and white. And also we had some kind of high profile cases. The fact of the matter is, This is a challenge for our times. We have got to get this right. We've got to educate ourselves and understand the problem. We've got to understand the environments where it occurs. We've got to take care of each other and get it set right in our head that this is a crime, it's a serious issue, it's a safety issue. And each and every one of you that deal in safety know, if you've got, you know how to deal with a safety issue. Very methodical, consistent manner, and very vigilant manner. So we have a series of efforts going on to deal with sexual assault, from prevention, getting to the environment, to making sure our victims are taken care of, and making sure that prosecution is proper. You will see some directives coming out on this matter. They'll be more overarching, and they won't be all that different from the things that we've already had in progress with regard to dealing with sexual assault. But that's my number one issue right now. Number two, suicides. There are more people, regrettably, taking their lives than have been in the years before. And it's creeping up. It's not this giant jump up, but it's continually creeping up. We measure suicides by how many suicides per 100,000 people, so there's a consistent measure. And I tell you, 3 years ago, it was 13. And then it became 14, and then it was 15 and a half, and now it's 17, roughly, over the last 12 months. So you can see it's creeping up. Why? I don't know. I would tell you precisely if I know. Who? It's all over the place. It's older, younger, it's reserves, it's active, it's people who've deployed, people who haven't deployed. It's expeditionary forces, it's afloat forces, it's people who fly planes. It's people who have gotten to the point where they're distraught and they feel that there's no recourse but to take their life. So the point I would tell you is, in the short term, keep your eye on your shipmate. If somebody looks like they're acting a little different, then you gotta talk to them. Have them seek help if they don't feel well. Get over the stigma. It's okay to not be okay. So suicides is number two. Number three is manning at sea. Gaps, there are too many gaps, and we're working very hard on that to get that going. We are making some headway, but we're looking at a broader approach to focusing more on at-sea billets and making that be sure that the Bureau, as we man and as we do our manning plans, as we think through, that we're focusing on the fleet response training plan, where is the unit in that, so that we are manning up in time during the training phase. Two, that at-sea time gets it proper credit for what it's worth, and that we are enticing people to stay at sea, and we're training them when they're at sea. So that's number three, manning at sea, and then lastly is op-tempo. And to fix op tempo, you got to get the manning right, but also you got to make sure the repair is done on time. So we're increasing the capacity in our shipyards, because if the maintenance isn't done on time and you're late getting out of maintenance, and then you're late getting into training, and then you're not ready to deploy when you need to, somebody is out there getting it done. So that's kind of one. Two, I got to have the conversation, and we are, with the combat commanders that said, this is how much Navy you got. We just can't meet the demand that you have, so we need to get into a more of a negotiation as what is the right number to deploy, and that's underway as we're going on. So those four things, sexual assault, suicide, manning, and op-tempo, those are the areas that I'm working on with the staff, and you'll see probably more about that than anything else. Some of you may have read or seen that there's an initiative by the Bureau called Career Navigator, which is out there. This will start into, it'll kind of go into effect, the first week in June. And what we're trying to do here is we've got a lot of disparate programs and ways for you to manage your career. They're on this website over here, this program, that program. Bureau wants to pull those together, improve the databases, improve the availability of this, and make it simpler for a sailor to go to a site where they can manage not only their schools, but manage also things they want to get online for knowledge, prepare themselves for their changes in their career and other things there. It's not going to be an overnight thing, okay? This is a longer term program. We're going to look at a host of things. We're going to look at detailing. We're going to look at retention authorization, okay? Formerly known as PTS, how we're going to do that. I want that process changed. We're going to overhaul that process. PTS. And more on that later. It's going to take a little time, but we're going to overhaul the process. I got it that it's not very popular, and we can do better. I know we can. So let me take questions now for a while. We'll delve into anything that you all may want to delve into. While he's going to the mic, go ahead, sir, and I'll repeat your question.
Good morning.
Why don't you go ahead and go up to the mic since he's ready to go. You must do karaoke, man. You hit that right away.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Good morning, sir. Religious Program Specialist Kolasik from Commander Navy Region Japan. My question is, with the rise of sexual assault and suicide, do you have anything planned for command religious programs to kind of change that, or anything in particular that you're leaning towards on how we're going to stop that? Because as someone who works with chaplains, we get that quite often.
Yeah, well, to the extent you'll be a reflection of the chaplain corps, I would have to say the answer is yes, because we're looking at the size of the chaplain corps, where do we station our chaplains, and what's the best use of them, if you will, or detail, distribution. So the chief of chaplains and I have talked about this. That, in addition to our Fleet Family Service Centers, to make sure we got the right counselors and all in that regard, the answer is yes. But my point to you, as opposed to managing by RPs, it'll be a reflection of where we put the chaplain corps.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, the major will take care of you with the point. Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. I have one grain here. I just wanted to ask the question, with the high influx of Navy sailors coming in, what can we expect in the near and long term with regard to TA?
Tuition assistance?
Yes, sir.
I don't think my plan is there's no change. What I want to make sure is that we aren't taking courses willy-nilly, that there's a focus, there's a plan. People are passing courses, but an educated Navy is a good Navy. Educated sailor is a good Navy, a smarter sailor. And more important to me, honestly, that you are prepared to do whatever it is you're going to do either in the Navy or out of the Navy. And I want you to be a leader, and I want you to succeed in whatever you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Go on. Okay, go ahead, miss.
Good morning, sir. IT Tube Shaw. My question is in regards to the sexual assault report that came out. There was an increase in undocumented sexual assaults. Do you have any plans to address how or why that's happening, and like how we can get more people to start reporting these sexual assaults?
Well, the best what people who understand this better than I tell me, it's about stigma. People feel that I'm not going to report this because, one, there'll be a retribution, which bothers me, because it's a safety issue. So everybody on board any unit or whatever ought to be very comfortable and be angry about the fact that it happened in their unit. But two, nothing's going to get done with it. And so what I found, and as I dug in, we don't actually publicize the results of some people who have been prosecuted and some who are in jail. And I don't know why. But so we're working. In fact, it's morning time here, but back morning in Washington, the chief of information, Admiral Kirby, is going to describe how we need to publish these results. There was a time in your Navy whenever on each ship, whenever mask was held, or even courts martial, it was published. And the idea was, hey, if you're going to do this, this is going to happen, and here it is. And I think we've fallen out from that. So that's another one. And then lastly, just the stigma of, oh my gosh, this is my fault. We've got to get over it. It's not the victim's fault, okay? So those are just some of the reasons, but that's what people tell me the reason is. There's an embedded hesitation for people to come forward.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Yes, miss.
Good morning, sir. I'm NC1 King from the USS Mustin. Now that it is the season for all first classes to be getting their packages together who were selection board eligible, as a career counselor, I see an influx of sailors coming to me to figure out how they can get their own PF records updated. We constantly send stuff to the Bureau to get updated in OMPF, and I'm an example of one, but it never seems to make our record. And because we were always told that the main records that's being looked at is your OMPF, even though you have your ESR and your N6 and so on and so forth, is there going to be a program that consolidates all of that information so that we don't have to pull out our hair sending in 50 million enclosures when the board doesn't have time to look at all those enclosures?
Well put. Where's my man Brian?
Right here.
Come on over here and talk. This is a guy that takes, he writes down, sees his iPad, he's got a hot iPad. I need to take this back and find out if that's in, it's in Career Navigator, and if not, we'll still got it. Would you give that to him? Thank you. Yes, miss.
Good morning, sir.
And I'll get you.
I'm Tito Lopez from Niagara Coastal. I wanted to ask, with the budget cuts and all the sequestration, how would this affect future projects such as the Zumwalt class destroyers and the America class LHDs?
Well, I got to tell you, if you said, hey, Greener, what's your number one concern on shipbuilding? I'd say, getting the amphibs done. We've got to get the America done and out, so we're pushing hard on that. A lot of change in the USS America, in the big deck amphib. Very digital. It's a gas turbine diesel combination. Very fuel efficient. That's very nice, but we put a lot of technology on the ship. We got to get it out. So no, nothing will hold that up. The Zumwalt class, all three under contract. It's under contract. You know, we got to get it done. You're welcome. Major, you got her? All right, great. Yes, sir, up here.
Good morning, sir. RBC Harris from Comp 7 Fleet, sir. My question is in regards to sea superiority. And in line with sequestration and your four priorities that you mentioned in personal behavior and manning, et cetera, what is the global perception of our ability to maintain sea superiority, given that we are plagued with such things in such a short period of time?
Yeah, that's a good point. When I talk about where we are in the world, it's not just how many ships we have, it's how many ships you have forward. And where do you have them forward? And as I said, we gotta be where it matters, when it matters. Out here today, we have 52 ships in the Western Pacific. 42 of those ships are out here, if not all the time, like right here in Japan or in Guam, and that, are out here being manned by Maritime Sealift Command people, so you get my point. We're going to increase on the current plan to about 60 out here by the end of the decade as we bring little combat ships in and some other ships, and we change the way we operate certain classes of ships. If you're here in Yokosuka, would you see a change? Maybe. Those are discussions we'll have yet to have yet as far as numbers in here. But as you look around the world, it's the type of ship we have and where it is. So you say, well, so how do you maintain sea superiority? We need to, we'll sort through what ships we want where. The COCOMs tell us that, and it's the capability in addition to ships, because people think if it's ships, that's it. It's not. When we bring broad area maritime surveillance, that's a global hop, a big unmanned guy with a lot of surveillance, that'll be out here about 2017 in Guam. Guam. And we will have the P-8, which replaces the P-3 here at the end of this year in Kadena, starting those deployments. And so it's not just ships, it's the number of systems. I am comfortable what we're building today will be able to do what we need to do. But as we go through these budget choices, my job will be to say, here's what you get for a Navy, here's what you get for the Maritime Presence Associated. If you want to reduce that, you have to understand there's a cost for that, and that's the capability. So that's on me, and that's what I got to take forward in that regard. Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, sir. ABH3 Sobochinski from USS George Washington. You said earlier in your speech that the sequestration wasn't going to affect us for deploying naval forces and operations. Does that mean that North Korea is a constant, because of North Korea's constant threat, is why we're not losing any money towards our funding for operations?
It's not just North Korea, but it certainly plays into it. This is, to me, I'm convinced, it doesn't take much to convince any of us, the highest payback we get for our Navy anywhere in the world, and where it is. The Japanese are terrific allies, and we've got the best ships and the best people here. You're all screened. So it would be crazy to reduce the operations out here. What happened before, we actually did cut steaming days out here because we got the budget cut just like that. We had to go wherever the money was, and so Compact Fleet had to dial that down. That's dialed back up, and it would be my plan to sustain it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, I think you're up, McClung. McClung?
Good morning, sir. HM3 McClung.
McClung, okay.
Around what specific time would we be able to see more manpower in the West as opposed to the East?
Sorry. Oh, you mean the kind of the shifting home ports, you need more ships west than east?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you mean? By the end of the decade, we'll be at 60% of your Navy, if you will, west of the Mississippi, and 40% east. Right now, we're more like 55-45. So when ships come out of overhaul, if they may, maybe we're on the East Coast, they may change home ports to the west. When ships are built, we'll migrate them more to the west. That's how that'll take place. And it's a metamorphosis, if you will, kind of a domino effect that takes place.
Thanks, sir.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Morning, sir. It's IT1 Shaw from NCTS Far East. I've been in the Navy for 9 years now. It seems like as time goes on, the training that we have for the vast majority of the programs, SAPR, what was once SAVI, CSAT, various other alcohol and sexual assault programs, it seems like they're going from shifting what we should be doing, or what I feel we should be doing with self-accountability, to looking out for your shipment, which I fully respect. It just seems like here, specifically last year, we got an all-hands call, and we were pulled for what we believe should be done to help the situation, and more than not, the response that came out was that, well, he should do this or she should do that. So I'm just curious, is the training that we're getting now, is it intentionally focusing on helping your shipmate, or are we just trying to move in a new direction with that?
It's focused on a few things. One, what we're finding is, particularly if you're talking about people who are distraught or people who would assault others, that those that study this tell us, you know, people who are willing to intervene can stop something before it goes wrong, whether you're at the bar, whether you're at the party, whether you're wherever, whether you're looking at your shipmate who's doing something very different than they've ever done before. Somebody needs to say something. And a lot of this we've learned through the wars, people with PTS, people who have had a proclivity to hurt themselves. And so we want to make sure, and in our society, people kind of go alone a lot, right? They go in the corner, put the headphones on, hit the iPad, do whatever. We're saying, hey, you got to look out for each other. That's what we've trained you to do. That's the heritage and the legacy of our Navy. So we're pushing that in. That doesn't mean if somebody else is looking out, you're not accountable. Oh, no. In fact, as the young lady came up and said, you know, why won't people report? It's because some feel, well, maybe there's a lack of accountability. And we've got to fix, first of all, that can't be, and we've got to make sure people believe that that's not the case. So that's not the intent of that training. All right?
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. Coombe to Walsh from CNFJ. You mentioned how you picture the fleet at the end of the decade. What do you picture for small boats, like frigates, which I know are being decommissioned, cruisers and destroyers?
Well, I see at the end of the decade, we'll have on the order of 29, 31, how many LACS we have, Brian? 31?
31.
Yeah, about 30 littoral combat ships, and they'll have mission modules. I would foresee they'll have more armament on them per ship than they were built with, because we got more payloads that can do more. We're developing payloads that we've put on the patrol craft. You know what a PC is? We've put better gun on that. We're putting a missile called the Griffin on that. That'll go on this August to make them better. Those things can be extended in range, get a better seeker put on them, and then you can put them on something like the little combat ship. I see special forces on special combat ships. I see marine detachments working with sailors to do better visit, board, search, and seizure on little combat ships. After the little combat ship, I'm scratching my head. I'm talking with the head of the surface warfare saying, what's the next ship look like? We have the Arleigh Burke, which has been an amazing ship. And, you know, part of my mind, I just build them forever because, A, we're getting them done on time, under budget, and they're getting better and better as we get them out. But the power, the cooling, and the aperture of power of the radar is limited, and we need to kind of get better at that for missile defense. But we need something lethal, fast, that kind of suits that Southeast Asia, Arabian Gulf. We got to continue to sort that out. For the near term, to the end of the decade and beyond, shortly beyond that, it's the littoral combat ship. But it's going to evolve, trust me on that. It's not what it is today, is not probably what you're going to see in the future. And if you went to the first gaggle of Arleigh Burks, they don't look anything like the ones today, or submarines.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. STS-3 Lee, CFA PCF. Two questions. How do you feel about our submarine fleet, and is the sequestration going to affect the new BN class?
The new SSBN class?
Yes, sir.
I'm very pleased with the submarine fleet. That is what we're building, because I spent a lot of my time on what we're building. We're getting value for the dollar. The last three submarines we got were about a year ahead of the contract when signed, and the builders actually made money. They made good money on it, $50, $80, $100 million that they split on building that submarine. And we're building them in blocks, so that's good. Operations-wise, it's a good community, small community. They're doing well. They have issues here or there on paying attention, like all communities. So I'm real high on it. How are we doing in the underwater domain? We own it, okay? We got to maintain it. There are challenges to it. And so we've got to keep our head in this game. But right now we own it. We are not challenged dramatically in there. And that is our asymmetric advantage. The SSBN of the future, we got to get it done. It's an, as they call it, an existential support for the United States. It's a national security program, strategic nuclear.
McCader?
Okay.
Just a quick question, sir. With the new sailors coming in, the Great Lakes, is that going to affect the our BTS program? Like, how many people are going to be able to stay in the Navy if they wish to?
No, I don't think so. I don't think the number of people coming in will affect the BTS program. You and I, in 6 months, kiddo, will not use those three letters. We're not going to do it like that. But no, I don't think so. And I think what you're saying is, will they not overman, you know, certain ratings? No, we're steering those to the ratings that we need. We won't get better. We'll just have the same number of gaps and see if we'll just be overmanned. It'll be harder to promote. You get the picture.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. ICF Indiana, USS Blue Ridge. I just had a quick question on STA program, like, will that be affected by sequestration?
What's the STA program?
Seaman to Admiral.
Seaman to Admiral? No, I don't think so. And I say that because, as you know, we're growing, right? As I told you, and so that will all be proportional to the number of ships we're bringing in. And the means of commissioning officers are about right. You know, ROTC, Naval Academy, Seaman to Admiral, etc. So it will grow in proportion to the numbers we need, if that makes sense.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Are you thinking about joining?
Yes.
Applying? Okay. Get your pin first, okay?
Yes, sir. With the current budget cuts, is this going to affect our ability to respond to threats, not with only the Pacific region, but throughout the world?
It could. It could. It's a matter of knowing where we got to be and when things are. The issues will be challenged. The areas will be challenged in the near term. We'll be in Southern Command and African Command. So we've got to work that out right to see if we don't have, for example, a frigate there or an amphibious ship, which we've had in the past, what can we put there? As the high-speed vessel comes in, it's got a nice capability match to Southern Command and African Command. So we have got to distribute appropriately and operate overseas more, like I described before. But yeah, in the short term, it will. Our Global Force Management Allocation Plan, that's the, if you will, you open it up and it tells you how many ships we're going to have in what theater next year. It's going to be smaller than it was this year because we'll have less budget and less training going on this year because of sequestration to send people overseas next year. So two things you got to look at. How many can you send over? And then we have to have a conversation with the combatant commanders and the fleet commanders over to say, I can send these people over, but their essential task list, that is their skill sets, maybe a little less than you're used to. Are you okay with that? And we got to have that conversation.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Yes, sir.
Information Technology Specialist, First Class Petty Officer Ross from the USS Fitzgerald. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I was asking, coming from the expeditionary community, I saw that we had, we were very sufficiently funded, got everything we needed, which is exactly where we needed to be at that time. Now, with the focus of the Navy being here in the Far East, I've just recently joined the Fitzgerald, and because of the sequestration, we had CASRECs that were not getting fulfilled. How do you see that going forward with the, as you were saying, with the funds being finally a budget being produced? Are they releasing the holds on CASRECs now, sir?
I certainly hope so. The money is there, but it will take time. You've got to line everything up. You got to buy it, get it from them, sub to the warehouse, out of the warehouse. You got to get the transportation right, and then you got to get the distribution. But especially out here, it should clear up pretty soon. And I need you all to pay attention to that and report that up so that somehow, because when you slow down like we did, okay, that happens suddenly, and then you say, okay, turn it up. It doesn't happen overnight. It's regrettable. It's awful. It just bugs the heck out of me. It's like a lot of things. It took so hard to get the momentum going, and then when you stop it, we got to get it restarted. So we need to hear from you.
Thank you, sir.
Sir. Bacon?
Good morning, sir. My name is Bacon from the U.S. Smuggler. I've got a question about all the programs out there.
So you're saying that maybe it's not just people out there drinking, there's an underlying trouble within individuals as it is, right? I think it's possible, it's feasible, we see it a lot. Some people suffer from something from a previous, I don't wanna say it may be not PTSD, they may have PTS, and it may have nothing to do with serving, you know, in an IA capacity or something else. Could be trouble at home, could be this, could be that. Their resiliency, they don't know what to do. Where do they reach out? And what I'm trying to say, and I was saying earlier, is if you see that, you gotta remove the stigma of saying, I don't feel okay, I'm different. Or you say, hey man, you're not right. I mean, this is not you, it's not the person I know. So we need to help each other in that regard and get them over to either family service center, see a counselor, and you say, hey, I don't wanna go see a counselor. Well, then go see somebody else, but speak up. Talk to each other.
What if typical signs are not present?
Yes.
Someone keeps the shelter where they have bombs that they just don't want to discuss, and they don't show any aggression.
They internalize it all and you don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Well, I would love to, the way, as I understand it, you could find it out is by communicating, by talking, you know, socializing. Beyond that, if people don't talk, they don't say anything, they're emotionless, their activity is exactly the same. I honestly don't know right off as we're having this conversation what we do, but we can't stop trying. Thanks, Megan. Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. Aaron Benishek, USS George Washington. I'm an aviation electronics and computing technician. And I've been noticing that some of the pieces of gear that we get in that we have to fix, usually there's only like small components that are broken on them. But we have to go by the pub when we get them fixed. And usually it's a broken resistor, a shorting out, or a capacitor that's not working. And they would cost maybe 25 cents or so to fix. But according to the pub, we would have to replace the whole circuit card, which can cost upwards of $5,000 to fix it. I'm just wondering if it would be like possible in the future to get pubs that go more in depth, so that way we can order individual resistors instead of spending $5,000 just BCMing the gear.
You betcha. You know what? If you're the guy that writes that pub and you're the company, you're going to lose money. But I'm with you. I'm not a demanding consumer. So I want you to fix the resistor, fix the capacitor, and say, Chief, this is BS. We shouldn't be doing this. We're sending this stuff. That's called D-level maintenance, which is deficient, which means depot level, means you send it back or you twiddle with it. And we want to get in the middle. You're talking about intermediate maintenance where you do the maintenance. I'm with you. Don't accept that. Be a demanding customer. I'm serious. You should, in the days, there was a feedback report for things like that. But he's writing it down, so we're going to look into that. And we're bringing a lot of new systems in, and we're being encouraged frequently to do precisely that, to turn a lot of the maintenance and those things over to the vendor. Sometimes it's a good idea. Sometimes it's not. I find that people like yourself who are curious, smart, you know how the things work, if you're out at sea and things, you don't have time to win, you're not close enough to send something off by cod or by helo, somebody's got to sit down and fix it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. Actually, Two Bigs from the USS Blue Ridge. My question is in regards to sequestration and advancement rates. With the upcoming cycle currently about to go through, is there any view on lower quotas than last cycle and lower quotas for the future cycles?
No. Advancement?
Yes, sir.
No. ARB, being what it was, everybody hated it, I understand. A lot of people didn't like it. It set us now so that advancements on a more consistent rate, they've been higher recently, I think you know that, in many of the areas, and the prediction as we look out there is that they will maintain about this level, don't see the dip. Sequestration this past year was, personnel were exempted, personnel and personnel programs, and so again, as we're growing, we'll have to keep all that in mind.
All right, thank you, sir.
Morning, Admiral ID3 Bill from USS McCampbell. As you pointed out, we rule the seas both over and under the seas. However, with each passing day, we're challenged more and more in cyberspace, resulting in a loss of information. How are we going to actually respond to this?
Well, we got to get hot. We are growing cyber warriors, so people are our weapons right now until we can get systems which can act sort of automatically by scanning the networks and finding things, people probing and do that. Very difficult legally to do that, because now if you're reacting to something probing, you go back up into something, you're into privacy, if you understand what I mean. You're into a hacker, private citizen. So we're working all that out. For the near term, it's getting people, are you a IDC person, information dominance? All right, it's people like you, Doyle, that are out there. Have you been at a NIOC yet? Okay, NIOCs and NICTAMs, that's big in the future. During the entire sequestration and continued resolution, that 6-7 month period, our cyber programs continue to grow, and they will. That's where we're headed. We got about 750, if you will, coming in, and then about another 1,000 over the next 2 years, coming in this year, another 1,000 in the next 2 years. So you can't grow them overnight. You got to get on a Corey station. You got to get the basics of it, but we've got to improve our training programs and our throughput to do the things that you're talking about. Defense, exploitation, and offense. You're welcome. Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. Aaron Little, USS George Washington. I have a question about transferring GI Bill funds. I was wondering if there was any way that I could transfer those to my little brother, who really isn't going to have very much help getting through college.
It would seem to me, I tell you what, I transferred my GI Bill entitlement to my daughter, and so I did it by going on the site. I don't know what else to tell you. In other words, I think you can do it.
All right. I just thought it was only for your children or anything like that. I was just wondering about
your brother.
Yes.
And you'd have to go check and look at the entitlement.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir. C. Carabon here at USS Muston. With the current stoppage of security clearance reinvestigations due to sequestration, is there any plan, or is the Navy still tracking to start them up with the new fiscal year, or
yes,
is there a plan to start
Yes, that was very unfortunate. Hated to do it. It's hard to do, and we're suffering. We got to get that going. And it's started.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Yes, Mitch.
Hey, GSCFN, from the USS Curtis Over, just a quick question about possible liberty policy throughout Navy-wide. As far as people making silly, stupid mistakes, my question is, why does it have to affect everyone else in that command, or as far as that ship or fleet-wide, instead of that single person?
Well, it doesn't. I can't speak to you Navy-wide. I don't really get involved in, you know, liberty Navy-wide. This region has the, you know, the forward deployed naval force, and overseas spots has different liberty policies for different reasons. Liberty issues are very, very sensitive in some areas compared to others. And so it is an unfortunate result of a few causing a real strategic problem and the amplification of misbehavior occurring in a spot. So as quickly as possible that we can determine if somebody misbehaves in a division. A lot of times the division doesn't even know about it and it happened. Well, it's pretty good if you self-police in its own right and say, who's doing this? Because it does hurt all, including the country. In the case of here in Japan, in Italy, it's also very sensitive in other areas. And so, I'm sure you're frustrated by the fact that somebody else is ruining your liberty, so why does this have to happen? Hold the individual accountable. So I tell you, as a group of sailors, as people, hold your shipmate accountable. Who gets us in these pickles, you know, overseas? Thank you.
Sir, ET1 Kidichai Swan from Subgroup 7. Are there any plans to forward deploy more submarines in other places than Guam?
Not yet, because it's the infrastructure. Pretty pricey, got to train, and we got to sort that out. But no, when we add one more to Guam in FY15, that's probably at the edge of the infrastructure, if you get my point, the amount of training and maintenance you can have. So we'd have to look hard at that. Not to mention, it's a pretty serious diplomatic investment by a country. Yes, miss.
Good morning, sir. I'm
morning.
MMFN. From USS Antietam. Due to the conversion of Ingemen to MMs, what happens to the Ingemen who are still on steam ships and smart ships?
We need Ingemen, okay? So it's not like the Ingemen rating and the skill set is gonna go away. But if you wanna talk about your specific rating and where that's going, I'd ask you that. And we'll get you an answer. I need your email address and your question to him. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Well, it looks like we're done.
Take two more.
Oh, you did? Okay. Take two more.
One, two, warrior.
That's all right. Go ahead, kiddo. Go ahead. Okay. We'll take one, two, three.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
C. Terramont Comstock from Submarine Group 7. My question this morning is regarding the Information Dominance Warfare PIN. Had a lot of help in creating the PIN for Submarine Group 7, and specifically the Submarine Force. It's still a relatively new PIN, especially in the Submarine Force. However, due to the instruction that's signed out, it's been limited to people primarily in the Information Dominance Corps. So there's a lot of sailors enlisted-wise at Submarine Group 7 and other submarine commands that are not eligible for the PIN, despite the fact that they support directly Information Dominance Warfare. I was wondering if there's any sort of change that's going to come about for that, or to open it up to more individuals.
So let me see if I got you right. These are ratings that work. Are these submariners that do IDC stuff?
There are submariners at the command. They're not directly in the IDC community. However,
yeah.
Some of their jobs, OSs, STs, things like that, directly contribute to the overall objective of information outcomes.
Right. So you think they ought to be able to qualify in that warfare, especially as others do in other warfare specialties.
Yes, sir.
Right? Seems logical. If you give Mr. Clark there in the suit, we'll go back and see what Fleet Cybercom's got to say. Your number.
Thank you, sir.
Go ahead, sir.
Sir, my question has to do with our pay across all the military services.
Pay?
Yes. We hear Congress, we hear the Senate House Committee say that all these different cutbacks and all the different budgets, thinking long term, isn't going to affect our quality of life. Although inflation increases 3% or more year after year, and our pay increases are only 1%. And over the last, say, compared to over the last 7 years, we're paid approximately 10% less compared to the same pay grade pay in the past. Is there anything in the budgets, as we're not supposed to, or as they keep saying, that it's not going to affect our quality of life, to get this, get us back on track to living in the same pay scales?
I think those that make this supposition or do this assessment disagree with you. I don't know the numbers, so I can't agree or disagree with you. Their point would be, when you take into account your commissary, exchange, medical, and the pay raise, and its connection to the consumer index, economic consumer index, which is the current law, that we're on track and has exceeded it. You say, well, I disagree with that, and that's fine. I will tell you that I think part of your question is, well, somebody looking at this, I mean, 1%, we're gonna start falling down, we'll go back to the bad old days. And I'd say, yeah, there is. There's somebody looking to see, what kind of force do you want in the future? Looking at base pay, do you want to compensate them with base pay as much or mostly? And then less of these entitlement pays, if you will, or special pays, I should say, I'm sorry. And then do you want to look at, what kind of retirement do you want? Now, if you wear a uniform today, you're under the retirement system that you signed up to, but do you want a retirement system that's 401k-like, and then when you leave the Navy, 5, 6, 7 years, you'll take that with you? Or do you want the current retirement system where everything is backloaded toward the end? Those are being looked at by a commission that is looking at all of that. What I would tell you is they will compare these, the consumer price index, inflation and all that, so they will do that. You can agree or disagree. I'd stay tuned to it. Sounds like you want to make a statement on that, and that's fine. But it's working. You should see something in the not too distant future. Yes, sir. You're patiently waiting, Barnes.
Good morning, sir. Everyone, Barnes, USS Mustard. Just a quick question. As far as warfare pens, is there any plans to go back to making them voluntary? The reason why I say that is because I think a lot of sailors feel like once it became mandatory, the program became corrupt. Sailors being forced to hurry up and qualify just to say they have it and commands can look better. I think it's one of the things when I came in that helped set sailors apart, and I think it shows that they're going above and beyond. Is there a program or is there any ideas maybe that going back to that same system?
No. You know what, Barnes, you seem to be a man of virtue and principle, and I'm not being funny. I'm going to go back and talk to Mick Palm about that and see where he is. Mick Palm West was very adamant that he feels, and he says he's got data that shows that, you know, when we went to mandatory pins, everybody was a warrior with a community, and we gained overall because of your knowledge of the ship, the unit, aircraft, and whatever. And that's the right thing to do. You're saying, well, you haven't gained anything if it's all corrupt. Right, that's kind of your point.
Yes, sir. I mean, I with respect to mine, I definitely agree with that theory, but like I said, just seeing once everybody's in the level have to get qualified, it kind of just ended up making it as special as it was.
It's good to look at this stuff every now and again. What was the intent and where are we? So, new Mick Pond, he's got a lot of energy, and he'll, and this has crossed his mind before. I had a question on a warfare pin up there. So I think overall, where are we? I'll ask him to take a look at that. Thanks for the question, Barnes.
Thanks, sir.
All right. Let me give you a few things that are going on, and then we're going to close up here. Appreciate it very much. I told you about Career Navigator, so more on that later. But this thing, all I want to tell you is this is the title of an overarching program that is going to walk through a lot of individual systems that many of you brought to bear today and say, you need to look at this. So it is not one system that's going to solve a lot of things. Don't think it's going to, and then you find yourself very disappointed. That's not the intent. It's to bring these things together. Two, we've got a uniform review underway, not more uniforms, the underway uniform. Some people ask, gee whiz, if I wear the NWU, it's, you know, if you put a torch on it, the thing will burn robustly. Well, we knew that this thing was not to be worn in the non-standard spaces when we made it up. I would tell you, I'm very comfortable that the uniforms that you wear in the engine room, where in the non-standard, if you will, shipboard spaces, are safe. We've looked at the uniforms, we're done with that, and now we'll distribute and make any changes in policy that we need in the future. But we've looked at this very closely. There's a lot of press on this that you can agree or not agree, and I'm telling you that we've looked at the science of the matter, and we're very comfortable where we are right now. However, there are some opportunities here for change to get a better fiber and to do that, and we should. And we can expand it maybe to a fiber that you can wear all the way around the ship, and that way you don't have to worry about just one space or another in that regard. There's a commission on entitlements and compensation that I alluded to before. You'll see something about that. This is not going to change your retirement overnight. If you wear the uniform, you're under the retirement system that currently exists. I think I saw some occasional family members here and some civilians here. And I want to thank you for what you're doing out here, especially you civilians who are willing to work overseas, come overseas and work. There's going to be a decision made imminently on the need to furlough or not. Nobody wants to furlough. We are working, the Secretary of Defense is working to drive that down as low as possible. We lose a lot of productivity, and you are civilian sailors, in my view, part of that team, and we need you very much. So, regrettable situation. We'll see where this ends up, but it has direct attention by the Secretary of Defense. One last thing, thank you very much for what you're doing over here, coming overseas, spending your time here. I would tell you, there's not a person that I've ever come across who'd serve over here in Japan that hasn't found that to be a positive aspect in their life, but it's a little difficult. It's a little more seat time, but you're on the cutting edge and you're doing a great job. I want to thank you all very much and all the best and good luck to you.